CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm. Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. CityTalk 105.9.
Hello and happy new year, and welcome to City Talk Business with me, Frank McKenna. I'm the chairman of the Independent Private Sector Lobby Group and Business Networking Club Downtown Liverpool in Business, and every Sunday we look at some of the week's big business stories affecting Liverpool and the wider Northwest region. This week, as we prepare for 2012, I'm asking the question, is the glass half empty or half full? Predictions tell us that growth in the economy will, at best, flatline during the next 12 months. Unemployment will reach 3 million, and the Eurozone crisis looks set to continue and put not just countries like Greece, Spain, Portugal and Italy at risk, but potentially bring down a currency and impact on stronger economies in Europe and beyond. But is all this just fluff and nonsense? Can businesses simply ignore the doom, gloom and despondency, get their heads down, sell their products and thrive? And with things like the Olympic Games nationally and the Global Entrepreneurship Congress coming to Liverpool in March, are there more reasons to be cheerful than most media outlets would have us believe? To chat about this and more, I'm sure, I'm joined in the studio by leading business mentor and coach John Haynes from the International Business Academy and Martin Best from a variety of organisations and companies in Liverpool, not least Document Direct and Paver Smith. Good morning to you, gents.
Morning, Frank.
Morning, Frank. Morning, everyone, and Happy New Year.
And is it going to be a good New Year, Martin? What do you think? What's your feeling for the next 12 months? What does it have in store for businesses, not just for your businesses, but for businesses generally and businesses in Liverpool particularly?
That's a very good question. I think, is it going to be a good year? I think what we have to do is look at expectations. I think the last couple of years, our expectations have been perhaps a little bit misplaced. Coming out of the recession of a couple of years ago, people thought it would be a normal type of recession and we'd bounce back. That's not been the case at all. And I think last year we suffered from a hope that things would be in that position. I think what we have now is a greater realistic view of the world. Things are not going to be easy. What you just talked about there, the economy, particularly the backdrop of the Europe, is going to make things, as I say, in China, very interesting. But personally, I'm more optimistic than I have been for the last couple of years. There's quite a good few things happening in Liverpool, and have happened, actually, and secured, you know, a less than damaging situation for us than the rest of the country. The Global Entrepreneurship Congress is going to be a huge boost and another fantastic spotlight on our city. So, you know, in broad terms, to sum up, quietly confident and optimistic. And is the glass half full or half empty? Well, I think the glass is too big. So, therefore, if you put what we have in a smaller glass, it's more than half full.
That's a very good answer, that, Martin. Should have thought of being a politician. John, what about yourself? Are you optimistic for the next 12 months? I mean, I know naturally you're an optimistic person. You know, you're always trying to G people up and motivate people. That's your business. But can you see the next 12 months getting any easier for businesses out there?
I think it's in our own hands, Frank, seriously. It's back to the old saying, Harvard Business School predicted. They said we're going to, they said this 18 months ago. They said we're going to make three predictions. The first prediction, in the next 3 years, there's going to be more change than we've ever likely to imagine. And there's going to be change in businesses, there's going to be change in schooling, there's going to be change in the economy. And in fact, they went on to say there's going to be more change in the next 3 years that our grandparents had in the whole of their lifetime. But take on change. The next prediction, they said, there's going to be more competition. And the competition are going to be after our lunches. They're going to reskill, they're going to reinvent themselves. There'll be no time to get into a comfort zone and claim status quo. But the last thing they said, there's going to be more opportunities in the next 3 years. Only for opportunities from entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs who've got this optimistic outlook, who are going to reskill, who've got competent expectations. So, yes, Frank, I'm seeing opportunities around, but I'm also facing reality. There is going to be a lot of changes and there is going to be a lot of competition.
Mm. I suppose what any objective person would say, though, is that businesses who are looking to be successful need to be nimble enough to change and to handle those sorts of challenges that are ahead of them. But do you still think that there are things out there, things within the existing economy and environment, that make it difficult even for well-run businesses to continue to sustain the level of commitment and effort that, let's face it, a lot of them have had to put in the last 3 years? I've been speaking to people over the last few weeks during the festive period who quite honestly are saying to me, well, if it's another year like the last three, I don't know whether I can be bothered. It's not that they're not confident about their business surviving, but they're not confident that the business is going to take the next step up. And certainly what they're not seeing is the sort of return on investment. And I'm not talking about cash investments. I'm talking about their time and commitment to their business. And they're actually saying, well, at this moment in time, I don't feel as though we're getting an awful lot of support and help to see why I should continue.
Yeah, and I can have a lot of sympathy for that view, but what's the option? We can't give up. You know, life goes on. We're in a country of 60 million. Is it fifth, sixth biggest economy in the world? There's still a lot out there. And I think John alluded to embracing change. And I think it's that sort of attitude that we need nowadays more than ever. You said an interesting word just then, intrapreneur. Presumably that's someone within a business,
yes,
who can,
right,
affect
Martin.
Change,
yeah.
and drive it inwardly. Yeah. And you know, I think if people can embrace that sort of philosophy, that's going to be a helpful mindset.
Mm. And are the things, John, that you would say to somebody who's a business owner at the moment who may be feeling a little bit depressed, a little bit down, you know, that it is difficult to escape the bad news, isn't it? Let's face it, I mentioned some of the things there that we've been seeing battered in the press, but you know, alongside that you have stories about the banks continuing to struggle. The prediction again is that we'll see more companies going bust this year. We're seeing our political leaders flounder, I think, and that's not a political point. I think whether you look at it from a Conservative, Liberal, Democrat or Labour perspective, I don't think there's any politician that has come out of this recession where we felt, well, that guy or that woman knows where they're going. They've got a vision to take us out of this, and they know exactly what the roadmap is and the route to recovery is. So against that backdrop, as an advisor, as a supporter, as a mentor to businesses, what's the sort of advice that you're giving at the moment, John?
Well, we've been very busy of late, Frank, especially before Christmas. Businesses are coming to us and they are worried. The banks have given them no leeway. It's vile what's going on with some of the banking systems they've got. And so we're asking three or four questions, Frank. Are the trends for your products or are the trends against your products? Now, sometimes we fall in love with our products. We fall in love with our services, our brand name. But sometimes the customers don't want them anymore. And because of change, we've got to stand back and say, well, listen, they've done as well for the last 3, 4, 5 years. I've earned a good living from now's the time. I've got to change. I've got to change dramatically. So we asked them, what are you going to stop doing altogether? What are you going to start doing? And what new products are you going to create? And I sort of get instilling this is going to go on for the rest of their working lives. They've got to meet this head on and create new products or change industries. And back to yourself, Martin, I am passionately believe now entrepreneurs are self-employed people. They've got to get out there every single day, every morning they wake up, and they've got to fight and win customers, otherwise they don't get paid. And I think entrepreneurs have got to be the same now. If you're an entrepreneur and you've got the good fortune to work for a good company who are giving you the trimmings, you've got to treat yourself as self-employed. You've got to get in there a little bit earlier, work a little bit harder just to keep your job this day and age. But Frank, I would suggest to everybody, meet it and be more creative.
And I think that's a great point you've made. I mean, I think, you know, if you look, let's take the retail sector, because that's a sector that is really struggled, is struggling, and again looks set to continue to. But the contrasting fortunes of Next, for example, and John Lewis. Now, John Lewis have said this week that they've been delighted with their performance over the Christmas period. Their turnover has been up on last year. Next, absolutely the opposite. You know, they've sort of flatlined and they've struggled a bit. If you look at John Lewis's marketing campaigns, promotional campaigns, I would suggest that that was a bit fresh. I mean, I don't know whether Next did anything over the Christmas period, but I certainly can remember some of the John Lewis promotions and advertisements and so on. Again, if you look at some of the retail brands that have gone from the high street, Woolworths, for example, I always felt that Woolies sort of missed a trick because it didn't embrace change. It sort of stuck with what it was good at 50 years ago and thought that it would carry it through. So if we take that on board, John, I turn to you really, Martin, as somebody who's involved in the smaller end of the SME sector, if you like, with the businesses that you're involved with. Is there room for a lot of businesses to introduce the sort of change and the directional shift that may be required for them to survive? Or if you're a business owner, an entrepreneur who's actually banging their head against the wall and thinking, well, actually, you know, another 12 months of this and I'm going to be really, really depressed. Is it a case of actually saying, well, let's try and do something else?
Yeah, no, I think that you've hit one of the nails on the head there. And whilst it may well be difficult to change a whole product line, or, you know, if you've got tooling that you've invested in, if that is not going anywhere, you're not just wasting that capital investment, you're wasting that human capital as well. So, I mean, you know, John's, you know, great in what he's saying. The hard thing is for a business person to take John's good insights and ideas and apply them to that business. But there is really no option. And I think, you know, the human spirit to adapt, the capacity to adapt is strong. So I think that can be done and the mindset can be changed. I do think, though, despite all of that, and, you know, the future is in our hands, what we could well do with a lot more support from is, you know, both central and local government, central more so. And if they just had an understanding of the true damage that's being caused through that lack of support. Because I think there is a willingness for businesses and entrepreneurs to start. I mean, last year, I think I heard something like 48,000 new businesses were registered, which was the highest for the last 3 years. So there is a willingness and a spirit to embrace, you know, what we need to do, and whatever, you know, big society or whatever you want to call it, devolving personal responsibility, that's good. But let's get rid of so much of the red tape, so much of the legislation that prohibits people like ourselves. And, you know, we each are all in entrepreneurs in our own way. We're not needing to be a Richard Branson or an Alan Sugar character. You know, everybody listening can be an entrepreneur.
And I just think that, you know, going into the third year, as they will be come May, the government do need to start delivering on some of the promises as far as the business communities is concerned. John, you agree with that?
100%, Frank. I think the time has come. I think if you're a politician, I think they're realising now politicians have got to have a sense of honesty and have clear values. And we're not stupid anymore. If a politician says something, it doesn't matter if it's 5, 6, 10 years ago, we will remember and we judge him or her on their honesty and integrity. So they've promised us many things, and I think the time has come now. They've got to deliver. The one thing I'll say about our leaders, Frank, this is the only thing that concerns me getting on a bit in life, is that I just believe you've got to have character, you've got to have willpower. And I believe character and willpower and courage is built from adversity. We have setbacks, we get hurt, we get made redundant, our businesses go bust, we get divorced. But they say all this adversity builds character. And I just worry about our two leaders, Conservative, Labour and Lib Dems. Have they got the character? Have they had adversity in their lives? I can't see it. They're fantastic people, public school boys, take nothing away from that. But they've never had the pain or the hurts. And they're making decisions on possibly our futures. And it just concerns me a little bit.
On top of lack of adversity, they've not actually had any business experience.
Well, that's a great point. And one we will pick up on after this short break.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
And welcome back to the programme. I'm joined in the studio today by John Haynes and Martin Best. We're trying to look into our crystal balls, I suppose, see what the next 12 months holds, trying to be as cheerful as we possibly can and optimistic. Posed the question, is the glass half empty or half full? I think we're all sort of suggesting it's probably just about half full. But we were talking before the break about our politicians and our lack of confidence, I suppose, in any of them having the ability, vision to really motivate and encourage us that they've got the answers to some of the problems that are facing the country, not just the business community, the wider community at large. And in the break, I was expressing the view that it's not just in the UK, but you look across the world, you look at Obama, you look at the candidates that the Republican Party are putting up to stand against Obama later this year in the presidential election. I mean, God help us if any of them win, quite frankly. And then, you know, even across the channel there, you look at Sarkozy, seems to be floundering a bit. Merkel, has she got a plan for Germany to be the to take over Europe without having to fire a bullet this time? Or is it just that they're trying to it seems to me that what our politicians are doing right across the world is they're taking a short-term view for political advantage rather than necessarily having a long-term strategy to get us out of the mess we're in.
Good, John.
100% agree on that, Frank. I got told many, many years ago that politicians do and say anything just to win the next election. Wow. But true leaders do anything and say anything just for the next generation. They have a vision for the next generation when they're not around. But most politicians will do anything just to win the next election. And we're starting to all feel, are we in that situation now with some of our leaders?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, there's a film out, isn't there, this week about Thatcher. Now, I think, again, I've probably expressed my views about Margaret Thatcher on more than one occasion on this programme. Didn't like her, didn't like her politics. But the one thing you'd have to say about her, and at the same time Reagan was in power over in the States, is that they had a doctrine, a dogma, a strategy, a policy that they were absolutely determined to pursue. And even at their lowest moments, they knew that they were not going to change course. I mean, one of the famous speeches that Thatcher made was when she stood up at the Conservative Party conference and she said, "You may say I'm for turning, the Labour is not, the Lady is not for turning." And, you know, she went on and she became probably the most successful Prime Minister in modern history in terms of election victories. That conviction politics seems to be missing at this moment in time. And as I say, not just here. I look at other political parties in other parts of the world and I wonder, have we got that sort of what John described as character early?
I'd agree we don't have true leaders in the words of, you know, the definition of it, like Churchill, you know, arguably a, you know, unquestionably a great leader. And picking up on what John said before, how did Churchill become such a great leader? That was totally born out of adversity and the experiences that he had in the previous 40 years of his life. Was Thatcher a great leader? Now, history might well argue not, because the roots of a lot of the economic problems can be found in the 80s, when we had the Big Bang and the banking system was liberated, and look where that's taken us. How do we get out of the mess that we're in now? We need a leader. We need someone with a vision. Or we need a different form of politics, and maybe politicians to stand up and be, again, picking up on what we said earlier, be honest. I do not know the answer. So can we collectively, and the coalition, I had hopes that they might be sort of the best of both worlds rather than you know, the modicum of moderates. Mm. It's just not working. So what do we need? We need a leader to appear.
Mm.
And it might be, you know, out of the adversity that we're clearly in, something happens.
Mm. Well, that aside, we've got political leadership in Liverpool, I think, that we would all agree has been very positive and has done a decent job over the past couple of years, despite the challenges that they've faced. And that's Joe Anderson and his team over at the City Council. He and his team will be looking forward to the Entrepreneurship Congress, which we mentioned earlier in the programme. That takes place in March. There's another couple of big events taking place. The Odyssey event, I think they've called it this. It's like the new spider, but it's a fish this time, isn't it? That's coming off. Mm. And, you know, again, Martin, they're trying to build on... come to you on this one, because they're trying to build on the links that they've started to make internationally through the work of Liverpool Vision, the Shanghai Expo. Mm-hmm. And they're looking to extend that now, aren't they, to take in the States and other parts of the world as well. So from a city perspective, there does seem to be a strategy in some leadership that perhaps will insulate the city from some of the worst excesses of the recession.
No, it does, and there's sort of clear, tangible evidence of that. I was really heartened yesterday with the statement that Joe made, putting his flag to the mast of Liverpool Waters, and clearly stating that the council will support the application for Peel against any objections from UNESCO. And I loved his phrase, you know, I'd rather have 5 billion of investment and 25,000 jobs rather than a certificate on the town hall wall.
It was one of the quotes of the year, so early on as well.
Yeah.
2012. Yeah, well, obviously, I would definitely agree with that. But what do you think in terms of trying to maintain the momentum that we built over the last few years of ensuring that Liverpool's place, as far as its marketing and promotion is concerned, it is high internationally? Do you think that's a decent strategy? Do you think that's something worth spending cash on?
Yeah, very much the right focus. We've talked about local markets, which, you know, encompass national, and it's the international marketplace, which is there and it's accessible to us. You know, China, which I've been to quite a few times and I know a little bit about, has a middle class and a growing population of 400 million of increasing disposable income out of the population of whatever, 1.2 billion. 400 million, it's just an incredible number, which is, you know, essentially the size of Europe. And Liverpool's connections with Shanghai and the links that we're building with other cities like Nanning and the south of China, you know, are vital. I think they've got the strategy nailed on. And it has, and that's what's been nice about that's been cross-party. You know, the Lib Dems helped encourage that a few years ago. That's been picked up by Joe and the Labour team. It's been embraced by many people in the city. Chamber of Commerce are playing a good part in building links with the US as well. So that's absolutely spot on as a strategy.
Mm. And as well as that, of course, the Liverpool in London initiative continues with the embassy, John.
Yeah, that's been a tremendous, well thought out decision, Frank, hasn't it? When you look back now, at first there was some opposition against it, but that really has been a success, so I'm very pleased with that. But overall, I think this year we all like to be a part of something big, something exciting. We would like to be a part of a vision, and I think some of the things we've got planned this year, especially with the global entrepreneurship conference, that's going to be big. As long as we market it right, as long as we get it right, and we get enough entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs involved in it, and the city feel like it's part of them, like the capital culture was just one of those years none of us will ever forget, because we had good leaders about, and people were excited in it, and we all felt involved in it. So I just hope this is going to happen this year. But once we feel there's an overall vision, we're a part of it, this will drag the city through all some of the adversity we're going to face this year.
I mean, some of the plans that are around for the GEC are tremendously exciting, and one of the things I've been encouraged by in particular has been the involvement of schools, because how long have we been talking about getting kids at an early age interested in business, interested in entrepreneurship, seeing the value of starting your own business? So to have schools involved in the planning of the event, as we've done, and again, you know, credit to people like Gary Miller and to Max Steinberg and his team of Vision, because they've really pushed that agenda forward. So I think you're right, John. I think there will be an involvement and an inclusivity that's required there. But it's only a week, isn't it? You know, it's not like the Capital Culture Year. Mm. It's a week. It's a snapshot of 2012. So it's going to be more difficult for us to ride on a wave of goodwill from a week of activity. I think it'll be it'll have a positive impact, don't get me wrong, but it's not going to have the same sort of momentum that Capital Culture Year had. However, if we were able to secure, let's say, the Peel plan and permission, mm-hmm. which, OK, it's not going to start tomorrow, but at least it'd be then on the blocks and people could start to see the potential and opportunity that was going to exist there. But then more short-term and of more benefit, I would argue, certainly, as I say, in the short to medium term, the turnaround facility. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, again, if we're looking for some leadership from our national government, what's going on with the delay in terms of that decision? Because for me, a quick no is better than a slow yes, often, you know, in business. Now, we as a city are waiting for a decision from our government about whether we're going to get the green light to go ahead with that particular facility. And to me, again, it sort of smacks of what you would almost say about this government. Indecision. No real firm commitment one way or the other. They don't know whether to support Southampton's objective or support Liverpool's ambition. And again, Martin, I know this was, you know, debated somewhat at your dinner late last year, but we don't seem to have even moved on from them, do we?
No, well, I thought you had the solution, which was to invite somebody from government, Esther McVeigh, coming in, and Joe Anderson onto your programme.
Hopefully we're going to have that debate. They both agreed to it. We're just trying to get a date in the diary now, and they will come and debate it. But, you know,
an arm wrestling contest, yeah, maybe might do it.
Yeah, yeah, but we don't want that, do we? What we want is for our local political leaders to be sat down saying, this is going to be great, and we want an answer.
Yeah. And it's a simple answer from sitting here. You know, Liverpool as a city are prepared to make that capital investment. We just want the opportunity to do so. And OK, there's a little residue of some European money, which can be repaid and resolved.
But what is the figure on that? Is it 50 million?
No.
Is it more?
Less. I had a feeling that it was originally about 9 million. But then through some clever accounting, that's been depreciated.
Right.
If you can depreciate it in that sense, down to about 5 million. Which I understand the City Council have offered to repay back.
It's not even a half-decent Premier League play, that, is it?
No.
You know, when you think about, we're talking about the amount of debt that the country's in, the amount of cuts that have had to take place at city level, never mind across the UK, it seems a nonsense to stop such a major project, even if the figure was 50 mil.
Yeah.
I can't understand what the delay is.
Well, I think, Frank, once again, we're talking about leadership, and I'm passionate because we train leaders up. And back to your comments you made before, Frank, about these youngsters in the schools and the teenagers getting trained up to be entrepreneurs. We've been taking them along to our academy. And, Frank, I've been absolutely so impressed with these 17, 18-year-olds who want to become entrepreneurs and run their own businesses. But we're giving them the proper skills. Now, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you've got to be a leader. If you're going to be a politician, you've got to be an outstanding leader. And a part of leadership is making decisions. And they say part of stress in all organisations of business when the leader procrastinates and they're scared to make a decision. And so they put it off, and then everybody gets frustrated, then everybody stops believing in the leader, and that's what's exactly going on now. Instead of coming out and saying, this is the decision, take it or leave it, but that's our decision. But no, they're not. They're terrified of making the wrong decision. They should be gathering the information and then making the decision. We're all getting frustrated.
I read a great quote over Christmas. I think it was about on Facebook, on the walls of Facebook, you know, whatever you think of them, they're a fantastic organisation that's come out. Something like, I'd rather get 90% of it right straight away than 100% right next month.
Yeah. Well said,
Martin. Because it makes such a difference, doesn't it, to all the decision-making processes, the investment that people make. You know, you think of the opportunities and potential that will open up to Liverpool. But equally, if the answer is no, then at least we can move our resource and effort and target something else. Let's see what the next big thing is.
Yeah.
But leaving us in limbo for what is probably about a year now. I mean, I can't. Yeah. I think it's about a year we've been having this conversation. Just seems a bit daft to me. But as I say, we're hoping to have Esther McVeigh talking on the government's behalf, obviously, and Joe Anderson saying what the city have been up to as far as that lobbying is concerned in the next couple of weeks. So listen out for details of that. We're going to take another short break. We'll be back with the final parts of the programme in a mo. Stay with us.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9.
Well, we're back and we're hoping to be a little bit more upbeat in the final part of the programme, and I'm going to ask my guests what their three wishes are for the forthcoming 12 months. But we mentioned at the top of the show some big events that are happening. We've obviously spoken about the Global Entrepreneurship Congress. We'll be talking a lot more about that between now and March, no doubt, here in Liverpool. But of course, it's the Olympic Games year as well, and the Prime Minister himself said that he would hope to use that as a bit of a foundation on which to build some confidence and success for the country. Again, if we felt, as you know, the north of England felt part and parcel of the Olympic movement, Martin, do you think it's all very southeast orientated? Boris Johnson waving the banner and lots of investment into London and sod the rest of us?
Broadly, yes, I think so. And it was London, to be fair, that did win the bid. So it wasn't the UK as such. So let's be like mindful of that. But nevertheless, it is the Olympics for the third time in this country. We're all, you know, very passionate and broadly patriotic. We all like to see our athletes win medals. I think we've got some opportunities here. Beth Tweddle, I think, is favoured quite highly in the gymnastics. Mm. And I'm sure we've got a rower or a shooter somewhere that'll come good. So I don't think it's going to be a huge economic benefit to Liverpool, but you know, it will add to the feel-good factor. And you know, in the doom and the gloom, what the heck, let's have a party.
And I think that's important, isn't it, that we have that feel-good factor. And again, we've got the European Championships as well, haven't we, in Croatia? Croatia and Poland, okay. I think, isn't it? So of England actually managed to do something,
to
make a change. But you know, if they did, then, because the great thing when the football is on, you know, when the successful England campaigns have taken place, it does give a tremendous boost to everybody, doesn't it? You know, people are walking to work with a bit of a spring in the step, the bars and you know, restaurants are a little bit busier. So if we could have that and the Olympics, that wouldn't be a bad summer, would it, John?
It'd be awesome, Frank. It's something to really, really look forward to. That's one thing sports does, like music. It unites people together. Mm-hmm. Sport, I just believe it's... you look at a sportsman and you get inspiration from sports people. People who are winners, they've got the discipline to work hard, get up early, train late at night, go the extra mile, and they get hurt and they lose a few races, but they seem to bounce back. So anybody who's involved in sport, by the way, when I was the regional director of Rawson Alliance, every time I was doing an interview, one of the key things with my interview skills was, Frank, have you taken part of any sport? Do you do any training? And if they said yes to me, they were the type of person, because a sportsman has hurts, they have disappointments, but they pick themselves up. So I think this year, Frank, with the football and the Olympics, this is going to be a year that we can all take inspiration from, take role models from. It'll forget us about what some of the politicians are doing. It'll give us all that lift. And it doesn't matter if it's in London, if it's in Liverpool, in Manchester, it's sport at the highest level. So I'm really looking forward to it.
And I think the Olympic torch at some stage is going to be in Liverpool. So that's, you know, a nice little tick in the box for us and a nice association with what is, let's face it, the biggest sporting event on the planet, isn't it? And it was the very reason you mentioned there, John, that it brings countries and people, nationalities together. But equally, it's a games that can inspire, because you get some wonderful stories emerging from Olympic Games, don't you? You know, people who have come from absolutely nothing, focused all their energy on a particular event, a particular sport, come out winning gold medals, and the next thing, you know, it does inspire the next generation of sports people. So I'm with you, John. I think it will be something to look forward to, and hopefully, as I say, our football team won't let us down quite as badly as they did in the last World Cup. What about the other big event then, which is the Queen's Diamond Jubilee? Because, you know, we all celebrated the royal wedding last year. We were told what a fabulous success it was, how it put the UK back on the international map as a great place to visit. And then 2 months later, the Chancellor was saying the royal wedding was to blame for the downturn in the economy. So we all got a day off. We had a bit of a party, or some people did. And then, you know, a couple of months later, we were telling us that it'd been a little bit of a damn squib. What's this going to be about? Is it going to be something that people will genuinely celebrate? Is it just another bank holiday that people will go and have a few extra jars? What's our feeling on this? John, I'll come to you on this one first.
Oh, I wanted that one. Go on, John.
Well, I think with the Chancellor's last remarks about it turned into a damn squid, I just believe, yeah, I believe in the royal family. They do great for the economy. You've got to give it to them. They've shown persistence against a lot of adversity, but it's not going to get anybody excited. I've got to say that, Frank, that the royalists will be about us. I've asked my staff already to work on that bank holiday. Now, come on, I'm an entrepreneur.
You don't have to give them the day off, by the way. It's voluntary.
They've agreed with me already. So I think it'll be good. It'll be good for certain people, but no, it's not going to be the highlights what the Olympics and the football is going to give us.
Martin?
Well, I'm just picking up on that. I love it, the way the government says, we have given you a public holiday. They have done nothing. Have they paid our wages for that day? I think it will be a little saccharine boost for whenever it is, June or July. And, you know, God bless the Queen, our unelected head of state. I think, though, sort of what I would wish is that trying to combine the two major events in the summer is that Pippa Middleton carries the flag in the opening ceremony.
That's one wish down. We only got two left. I hope that's been well thought through, Martin. I'm totally ambivalent towards the royal family. I don't care one way or the other. If they disappeared tomorrow, it wouldn't make me be particularly gleeful, but it wouldn't disappoint me either. I don't think that the sort of money that's going to cost the economy this year is necessarily sensible. But the thing that amazes me about any time the royals come on the TV, I don't know if you were watching the newscast at the weekend when the Duke of Edinburgh decided that he was going to take a 100-yard walk. And there were crowds of people cheering him on, and there's 5 minutes on the news. You know, now, okay, he's a 90-year-old guy. He's looking well. But, you know, some people might argue the lifestyle he's had, he should be looking well. He's had a serious operation, and we all wish him well for that. But there are some people, John, in this country who are just obsessed with them. You know, they'll get 100%. Out and wave the flag at any 100%. Sort of excuse. And I do wonder whether there's a bit of a north-south divide on this, you know. Because I think when you go down south, you do get a lot more support for the royal family and the monarchy than you do in the north of England.
Although, to be fair, they both had a good welcome when they came to open our new Museum of Liverpool a few months ago.
Yeah.
So I guess
I don't think there's any major feeling of, you know, anti-royal. And maybe that was knocking about a little bit during the, you know, 97, Diana's death and all that sort of thing. But it quickly evaporated, didn't it? And, you know, I think, as I say, generally, I think most people are fairly ambivalent towards them. But I just, it amazes me whenever I see people, you know, standing with the kids on a Sunday morning, you know, giving a clap and a cheer to a 90-year-old guy because he's walked 100 yards. But, you know, hey, no.
He didn't.
Each to their own.
He didn't do a sub-10 either, did he?
No, didn't. Maybe he was looking for Pippa Middleton, but we won't go there. He's had one of his wishes, John. Wishes for 2012.
Know what I'd wish for this city, Frank, that over the next year we get through all the setbacks, the adversity, the disappointments, and the city become totally united and we leave a legacy for the next generation. This could be the year that we could tell our great-great-grandchildren that we went through all this. We had obstacles, we had challenges, the government at times done this, but we come through it as a city and we leave a strong legacy that we could be admired from the next generation.
Okay.
Wow, how to follow that?
What, yeah, I was just going to say, Martin. That's...
World peace and end to famine? No, I'd probably echo some of those generally, probably on a more frivolous nature. From a personal point of view, I'd like my kids to get through their A-levels and my eldest son to get a decent grade at his degree. Personally, I have a challenge to read War and Peace, would you believe? Which is a drunken bet with the marketing director of the Reader organisation. Jen is well ahead of me at the moment. And of course, for our mutual team, Everton, to embark on that long, outstanding, successful cup run. This season or next.
let's hope. That's interesting, because the War and Peace one's a bit of a resolution, I guess, isn't it? Did you make any resolutions, John?
Yes, I certainly did, Frank.
Go on.
I'm an Evertonian, Frank. I can't say this in public. Shut down. No, my resolution, Frank, is to be at the end of the year. I've got three new skills I've got to learn, right? I've got three goals I've got to achieve, and I've got three new private things that I'm not going to discuss on air.
Oh, that's that's intriguing, John. We'll be having people phoning up the Pete Price show in the week saying, what was that John Ames talking about? We want to know the dirt on that guy.
Will you tell us next year?
I'll tell you later.
I think the other thing that you know, we could probably all subscribe to is that whatever happens, and again, we probably reflected on this a little earlier, didn't we? It would be nice to know actually where we are. You know, maybe a bit of honesty is introduced into the conversation. And instead of people trying to kid each other and blame the last guy who was in power or, you know, the banks or whatever, to actually just say, well, whoever's to blame and who's ever at fault, this is the situation we're in. And these are the sort of challenges that we're going to face. Because, again, you do sometimes get mixed messages, don't you? So I think one of the wishes I'd have is some consistency of message, that people actually do sit round the table. And, you know, we've used the word honesty, which perhaps is a little strong, because, you know, from the banking sector through to our politicians, sometimes what they would say to you privately is, well, actually, the people out there, you know, they don't want us to be honest. Because every time we say something that is honest, we get a good kicking for it. So they go back to their default position, which is, let's try and keep everything sort of steady as she goes, when actually the reality is something different. So I'd like us to have perhaps a bit more mature, grown-up conversation.
And Frank, wouldn't it be great to hear some of our leaders, even our politicians, even ourselves, even parents, just turn around for once and say, listen, I was wrong. Or I made a mistake. Or, listen, I've changed my mind, because 70% of all decisions are wrong in the fullness of time. And just for them to say that shows character and courage, and we'd respect them a lot more, not going into the blame. So that's a good one from you, Frank. Hopefully we'll get it.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think a new politics has been promised in this country for the last quarter of a century now, and we're still all waiting for it. But it's not just, as I say, politicians. I think there are certain industry sectors as well that have made statements publicly. We've all heard the banks were open for business. We all know they're not. Not in, you know, nowhere near open for business if you're a small enterprise. So, you know, as I say, a bit more honesty across the piece would be, I think, my main wish. And then you got the ball out, John. But we're all Evertonians here today. I want to talk about both of our clubs, actually, because, again, I think from our city's point of view, we do miss the European football, don't we? The European nights, even though it was largely the Reds who were bringing people into town, we had a few good seasons in Europe as well, and it makes a hell of a difference to the economy.
Yeah, it does. And as a supporter, you know, I loved the Europa Cup and the trips out to Lisbon and Florence and that. And okay, the clubs didn't. But I think, being realistic, neither of our clubs are going to finish top four. So what are we playing for nowadays? Which is quite an interesting question. I don't have the answer to, but it's to do as best that you can. And I think you know, the two clubs' expectations are probably a little bit misplaced at the moment. But it still makes for interesting debate, and you know, the banter never ceases. So I guess my final wish, if I haven't already made it, is that we finish above Liverpool for the first time since a season when they won that penalty shootout in Istanbul.
Yeah, and everyone forgot then, didn't they, because of that. I would love to see both clubs somehow, you know, we win a cup and Liverpool finish fourth or fifth or whatever, you know, finish in Europe, because, as I say, it does give the whole of the local economy a boost. I'd also like to see some solution, though. I doubt this is going to happen, to the whole debate about the ground. Because of the ground, you know, the grounds, the stadium. Because for me, neither club are anywhere near getting their own ground off the off the blocks.
It's sad, Frank. It really is sad. We're talking about decision making again. They've got to realise we're in the 21st century. We've got to make a quick decision on that.
And as businesses, you know, really, they should be thinking a bit smarter, shouldn't they?
Only we had time to debate about the shared ground once more.
Oh, well, we've done that before, and I'm sure we'll do it again. But I'm afraid we've run out of time. That's it from me, Frank McKenna, and City Talks Business for another Sunday. Thanks to my guests. Thanks to my producer, Jonathan Green, and Jonathan Dean, even. And most of all, thank you for listening. Have a great week. Enjoy 2012. I hope you get all you wish for. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. We'll catch you next week.
Downtown Liverpool in business with Frank McKenna. City Talk 105.9. Listen and log on to great music and great conversation on City Talk 105.9.